Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, College Football Week 2. Powered by betonline.ag. Busy show on tap. Joel Klatt of Fox Sports 1 fame will join us to break down the biggest games. Dave Mason stops by to share what was good and bad for the house during College Football Week 1. And of course, the man who needs no introduction, my esteemed co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
What's the word?
Not much, man. Not much. I want to know how hurricane prep is going down there in South Florida, if you're ready to get on your Gulf Stream and head off to one of your many estates somewhere in the Caribbean.
It's about a 90-minute wait at 4 a.m. to get gas. It's just mayhem out here. The other thing is, apparently, and this isn't, you know, don't take anything bad about this, they sent too many supplies to Texas. So now we're kind of short on supplies. The water thing is ridiculous. Like, 7-hour waits at Publix just to get, and they're like monitoring it. You can only get, they're rationing it. You can only get one case of water. So craziness down here. Debating making the move out. I've been offered a couple decent things. So I'm debating. Had to shoot the podcast first,
though. It's a good thing, though, that even if they're rationing water, that you keep 97 cases of smart water, you know, within arm's reach. So if there's someone that's going to be able to potentially survive some of the after effects should the hurricane hit as a Category 5 like anticipated, you, Payne, will be optimally hydrated.
Yeah, 200 ounces a day.
200.
So, you know. I was doing this research online yesterday, actually. Apparently, you can survive on about 34 ounces a day. So, 34. I'm going to be okay here.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay. And for all the folks that are listening to the podcast, I mean, if you knew how many times we often had to interrupt this so Payne could have bathroom breaks, you'd think the guy had one kidney over there. For all the folks, though, tuning in to the Bet the Board podcast as part of the Outkick the Coverage Network. Subscribe to the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes. We also have an NFL edition every Monday and Thursday as well. Payne, college football fans love to overreact to what they saw last, especially when it pertains to week one results. From your perspective, what were some of the biggest surprises, both positive and negative, that we saw through a limited sample size?
Well, obviously all the Texas schools. That was disappointing, I think, you know.
I don't know which team was more disappointing. Texas losing as 19-point favorites to Maryland, A&M blowing that massive lead to UCLA, or Baylor losing to college football powerhouse the Liberty Flames as 35-point chalk.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of upsets this week. And I think each of these schools, when they lose, it's a little more difficult because we envisioned them on the ascend. They weren't coming down, right? New day, new direction, new feel kind of thing. Texas brings in Tom Herman. They return a slew of defensive starters, and they get derailed before the train even starts. Baylor, if you've done any reading, all I have heard all summer were reports that, hey, we did the Big 12 tour. You can't tell a difference between Oklahoma and Baylor talent-wise. That's all we heard.
That might be the case. The only difference being we could definitely tell a difference in the results from week one.
I mean, so that's all we heard. So we're like, oh, Matt Rule's the man. Love the hire. They're going to just kill it from day one. And the team in your backyard, I feel bad. Like UNLV, for the first time in a long time, gets national attention because they're the butt of the joke, setting the college football record for a 45-point loss as a favorite. So for them, I think it's discouraging because they're never going to be a national power, but they were quietly improving. They were getting more talent there. You got the head coach from Bishop Gorman starting to get things on the ascend. This was a team that was going to be a dark horse in the conference. Oh, and to lose that game scary. Now you go to a weird environment, right? You go to the Kibbe Dome, which is an absolute dump, but it's just a weird place to play.
You know what? If we have a lot of listeners up there in Moscow, Idaho, I apologize in advance for pain-taking
shots. It's a high school gym.
Yeah, I mean, that's there's a
and
trust
it's
me.
Not, it's not like heated. So, fortunately, UNLV goes early in the year.
There are a lot of high school type gyms out there throughout the Sun Belt, and obviously part of the reason Idaho will be transitioning away from FBS into FCS. But you mentioned UNLV, definitely one of the more disappointing results, and alluding to the fact 45-point favorites losing outright marks the largest upset in college football history
on record.
On record, exactly. So much made about Armani Rodgers and this offense from Tony Sanchez. If you read his comments throughout the summer, we're going to average 40 points. We're going to compete for a Mountain West title, and it's just more of the same for the Rebels when you want to start building momentum, knowing that a new stadium could potentially be in the works a few short years down the road. Specifically Florida State, though, Payne. Where do the Seminoles go from here, losing DeAndre Francois for this season?
It's a good question. I think if you've listened to our preview podcast, you know how I feel about DeAndre Francois. The ceiling is pretty low there. He is not accurate at all on short to intermediate throws. We saw that once the script came off. Jimbo had a fantastic script for the kid early on. Script wears off, and you actually have to call some plays in the huddle and do things on the fly, and it looks drastically different. I don't care if he was playing Alabama or UAB. The two interceptions he had, he literally stared down the defenders and threw it in there anyways. The play before the half, certainly it was pass interference. Should have had the ball at the two, take a couple shots. Instead, you get a field goal blocked. But no one's going to talk about how bad the throw was. If you go back and look at the film, the receiver beats his defender by 6 yards. Throw the thing over the middle of the field. You had all the time in the world. It's a walk-in touchdown. So he's just not very accurate. Now, I want to say for James Blackman, the footwork is going to take some time, but his ceiling is much higher than Francois. He's a better thrower. If you look at some of his film in high school, and I know I don't like to do that, but he had you blocking out there for him, and it looks like every single throw on his high school tape, there's a defender in his face. He's getting tackled. He's throwing on the run. I'm not sure how drastic the drop is, and I think it's much less than people think because I was mocking sportsbooks having Francois as the fifth favorite for Heisman. I mean, that was just banana land. So the other thing is you think you're going to lose a lot of leadership. When you watched that game in Florida State in the second half was going 3 and out, 3 and out, 3 and out, did there look like there was an encouraging presence in the huddle there for Florida State?
Not for me. Head I mean, it looked down. Like the team looked defeated. I mean, yep. You had special teams blunders and you had the offense that just couldn't get things going. Rather than the rallying cry and the one thing we've heard throughout his career, previous Florida State quarterback Jameis Winston, he was a leader. He was a kind of player that guys wanted to rally around. I never got that feeling from DeAndre Francois last season, or exactly as you allude to, once things started to go south against Alabama, that he could get the team back on track.
And you mentioned the Vegas top 10 we're doing for OutKick, and I think people will be a little stunned to see that this week, so you're going to want to check that out. But I think the biggest takeaway here, despite the final score, which we know now when you dig back in with special teams aided. Like, even in Saban's losses over the last few seasons, there hasn't been a team to stalemate Bama and in certain stretches dominate in the trenches the way Florida State did. Defensively, there were stretches where they were dominating Alabama, and there were certainly stalemates up and down those lines. It's going to be interesting to see what Bama is moving forward because I know we're going to look at the play where Francois gets injured and say, what was the left guard doing? You know, he's out there sniffing daisies and just, how do you not see that? At the same time, Francois holds onto the ball for about 9 seconds. Throughout the course of that game, I know they didn't get a great push in the run game, but they were pretty good. And the question becomes, is Alabama's defensive line, who lost a lot, not able to get after the quarterback well this year? If you literally watch every single play, I was happy with how Florida State's offensive line did.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely going to bear watching when we see Florida State, not so much this week against Louisiana Monroe, where they are 32-point favorites at betonline.ag, total there 53.
Took some sharp money, so I think people kind of agree with my Blackman thought process.
And I think it'll be fascinating to see, Payne, not only how they perform, there are clearly distractions. We've seen the kickoff time get changed due to precautionary stuff for the hurricane that may get up there into the panhandle area. you know, what Florida State's number looks like the following week when they take on Miami. Of course, the Hurricanes aren't going to get the luxury of playing Arkansas State this week. They're going to have a bye, and that can either work in your favor, that can either work against you. So I think when we reconvene at this time next week, we'll have a lot more to talk about how the market's going to respond to Florida State and what they see the prognosis for the Seminoles moving forward looks like.
I think it's interesting from this perspective. If you're Florida State, I know you just got beat up against Alabama in the trenches, so it might not be a great performance this week. But if you were to lose your quarterback, I don't think you want a bye week. I think you want Blackman seeing some live bullets here, certainly an advantage for Miami. But I don't think that's an area where Miami has their quarterback situation solved either. So it's going to be a very good game, certainly more competitive now. Francois is clearly an upgrade over Blackman, but you know, come game 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, is it even? You know, I don't know, but I think it's much closer than people think.
And we'll, of course, get a better indication. I'll be more fascinated to see where that total opens. But there was one Herculean performance that we saw on Sunday, and there was a man in the booth who saw it up close and personal. Excited to welcome in one of my former Fox Sports 1 colleagues into the Bet the Board family for today. You heard him on the call of Sunday's ridiculous UCLA comeback against Texas A&M, and you'll be able to listen to his outstanding analysis alongside Gus Johnson all fall long. You can follow him on Twitter, at Joel Klatt. All right, Joel, we have to start with the obvious. Recreate the scene for us Sunday night at the Rose Bowl and try to give us some historical context on Josh Rosen's performance.
That's almost impossible. I have not seen anything like that whatsoever. And to give you a little bit of historical context, Dodd, I was actually in the booth. I know you'll remember this game because the Vegas guys and the bettors had to just be marveling at this game. It was, I want to say, maybe 2011 or 2012, and Geno Smith was playing for West Virginia. And they played Baylor. Baylor was their quarterback was Nick Florence, and it was in Morgantown. And West Virginia won 72-65. Do you remember that at all?
I do, because I looked at the game and kind of did a double check every time I would check the scoreboard going, how do I not have a ticket on the over for this particular game, as they went up and down the field with two play drives, three play drives. And I feel like it was an early kickoff, like 11 o'clock central for that one.
That sounds about right. Yeah, it was definitely a day game. But anyways, I was in the booth for that game, and I thought at the end, I was like, that's the craziest thing I've seen since doing like arena football, right? It was absolutely wild. But what I saw Sunday night, even topped that. And I think the thing that was most shocking about it was that it was systematic. You know, it was not a pick six or a scoop and score or a turnover that created a short field like what happened with the Patriots and the Falcons in the Super Bowl. It was literally just five straight, like, we're going to stop you and then we're going to score. And it was remarkable. And then just Rosen's performance. He was beaten up so badly during the course of that first half. Never got upset, never yelled at a teammate, never yelled at a coach, just kept going out there and showing some remarkable resiliency. And at the end, he was dropping some serious dimes out there, accurate balls that his wide receivers could run through and get some yak after the catch. It was crazy, man. I was loving it. And I got to sit next to Gus Johnson. I called it. I mean, come on.
It's something everybody dreams of, to be there for a miraculous comeback, have Gus there, and the energy has to be simply contagious. I mean, does it change the way you look at UCLA's season outlook there? I mean, we know that they were listed as second favorites behind USC coming into the season. Obviously, we see Sam Darnold struggle a bit. We don't push the panic button in this business. But do you think this galvanizes a team like UCLA, and maybe that's more indicative of what we're going to see going forward than what we saw over the first, let's call it, you know, 35 minutes or so?
Potentially. Now, I just, not that I want to throw cold water on it. I just want to pump the brakes a little bit, because they were thoroughly dominated, and they were still, you know, a team that its roster was very much inferior to Texas A&M. They just happened to have the best player on the field in Josh Rosen. So with that being said, there is some more optimism than I was starting to feel in that first half. Trust me, in particular from the crowd at the Rose Bowl, you know. But I just don't know if they can play at the top echelon of the division, the top echelon of the conference. That Stanford game, I believe it, they play two games. They play Hawaii and Memphis. They should win those games, even though they've got to travel to Memphis in kind of a weird non-conference matchup. But then they're going to have Stanford, and that's where we're going to find out if they're, you know, actually galvanized, actually going to be tougher in the run game or stopping the run, because they weren't able to do those things. They got away with it with a great epic comeback from their quarterback. But if they can't do those things moving forward, Todd, it's going to be a long year for UCLA again, just like it was a year ago.
I mean, you look at what Kevin Sumlin's had to deal with. I think Jim Mora takes the pressure off his shoulders, at least for a little bit. Thankfully, around here, Payne and I don't have boosters coming out making posts on Facebook to question our job security. So it's a nice little luxury we have compared to the guys
at
College Station.
Not just boosters. That guy was a
Board of Regents, I should say.
Like, I mean, that would be like your boss posting on Facebook that he wants to fire you. He would be like, oh, my gosh.
Julie,
I'm not going to show up for work.
You mean Entz doesn't go on Facebook and make posts like that if you and Gus have something go haywire in the booth when it comes to the live sports division of Fox?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, he may have a private account, or he may be under some sort of alias posting those types of things. And if he is, then I'm actually thankful that it's an alias.
Now, the other game you called on earlier in the week was Washington-Rutgers, and we saw that you had Washington pegged as the number 9 team in your poll, released after week one. You know, what did you see from the Huskies in their season debut, and obviously what looked like a pretty pedestrian performance to the untrained eye?
Yeah, and it was, whether it was trained or untrained. And I think the thing that was most worrisome, if you're a Washington Husky fan, or if you're looking at them, you know, from your guys' perspective, is the fact that their offensive line was thoroughly dominated. You know, they lost the line of scrimmage. They made a lot of mistakes. And that was something that I thought was going to be a strength. They were able to run the ball a year ago. Their offensive line was pretty good protecting Jake Browning a year ago. And I thought there was some sort of regression during the offseason. Now, we'll see if it was just the lengthy coast-to-coast trip. Kind of a weird Friday night game, and maybe they're going to play better moving forward. The hard part is, Todd, we're not really going to know because they don't play anybody. You know, so until we get to Stanford on a Friday night, until we get to maybe at Colorado, we're not really going to know if Washington is for real or not, because they didn't prove anything against Rutgers except for the fact that they had a couple of players that were far superior to anybody Rutgers had. And those players were Dante Pettis and Miles Gaskin. Dante Pettis with the punt return for a touchdown. That was a great punt return for a touchdown. This is a guy that does that on a consistent basis. And then Miles Gaskin was the one that was making people miss in the backfield, finding a crease, and getting their run game going. Browning was pedestrian. The offensive line was pedestrian. Their two bright spots were those two players and then a young secondary who lost three guys to the NFL all in the second round and played pretty well. They had some young guys that stepped up and I thought played well, showed some speed, playmaking ability, a couple of picks. So from that standpoint, there was some positives, but there certainly was some negatives as well.
It's one of those things that we've talked about, Joel, at great lengths. When you look at Washington's schedule, you have to put Wisconsin in that same kind of bucket. Teams that don't really play anybody early in the season, we talk about these marquee non-conference games and getting an idea of where teams are at. But you said something interesting, and I can't remember if it was on the telecast or after, not regarding Washington so much, but as Rutgers. You said you think that they can get to the postseason. What jumped off the page to you watching Rutgers perform, leading us to believe that they can get to 6-6 and qualify for a bowl, which is a far cry from the way they limped to the finishing conference play a season ago?
Yeah, when you own the line of scrimmage against a team like Washington, you know, it's not all Washington's fault, if you will. You know, it's easy to say, hey, that offensive line didn't play well, no one played well for Washington, but then that's not giving probably enough credit to what Rutgers is doing and how they're turning things around there. I think Chris Ash is a really good football coach. I've seen him at practice. They coach really well. He's got some veteran guys on that staff, including Jerry Kill, the offensive coordinator who comes back into the coaching ranks. I was impressed with Rutgers. They were tougher at the line of scrimmage than they were a year ago. And then, Todd, their offense is totally new, not just schematically. Every skill position player was a player that they did not have during Big Ten conference play a year ago. Janarian Grant was injured in that Iowa game, and remember, he's probably the most explosive player that they've got. Not just probably, he is. And then they've got four transfers a graduate transfer at quarterback, Kyle Bowlen, and he's not the greatest quarterback in the world, but he's certainly an upgrade from what they had. I think the biggest addition, Gus Edwards, the running back, a graduate transfer from Miami. They've got another graduate transfer from Arkansas at wide receiver. They've got another transfer from Miami at tight end. So they've got five skill guys that can actually play and were recruited to big schools and signed there and played there. So it was certainly a different team than what we saw a year ago. And if they put forth the effort that they did against Washington, they're going to win five, maybe six games. I truly believe that. And a lot of that is the fact that I really believe in that coaching staff. I think it's a good coaching staff. And I think Chris Ash is a guy that can turn that thing around.
It'll be interesting to keep tabs on how they perform. I know from an undervalued perspective, I mean, those are always the kind of things we look for, teams that the market doesn't quite respond to in a betting context. But Payne, when we looked at Joel's top 10, we took a little bit of umbrage with some of the numbers he had out there compared to where our numbers have teams pegged after week one.
The wise guys don't agree with me.
Yeah, just for our listeners' sake, hearing this for the first time, I'll quickly rattle them off. Joel had Ohio State 1, Bama 2, Clemson, Michigan, Oklahoma, Penn State, Oklahoma State, USC, Washington, and Stanford. I guess the big question here is, where's Florida State? Is the Francois injury just too much to overcome in your mind?
No question about it. No question about it. Now, we'll see what happens when they go through an ACC schedule, and they're not going to be playing Bama every week. But I don't want to overreact, but that guy was alone on the field a year ago. I mean, his offensive line got him totally beaten up. And then they looked fantastic with him, and we'll see what happens moving forward. That was a wait-and-see type of a deal. And I thought some teams earned their way into the top 10 with performances from week one, just some depth, some balance, in particular balance when I look at a team like Stanford. But you got to react a little bit. They lost the game. And to me, I'm more of a what do you deserve versus what does versus best, I guess is the, and I think when Vegas goes out there and they're going to put their numbers out and you guys are going to put your numbers out, you guys do it based on just like who's the best team, right? Like who's going to win in a neutral site matchup this week. But I'm different than that, right? So like my fiber is in college football where I want to give teams and players credit for what they're achieving, not just what they did in recruiting and what we think in the preseason. And that's not to demean in either way. Like obviously Vegas didn't get built, you know, overnight. So that works, saying valuing teams for just how good they are talent wise. But I think that we also need to value teams. For instance, I was an Iowa fan a few years ago. Vegas was not. You know, but I was like, they are earning their right to be ranked in a certain spot. So I think that's the crux of kind of the way I rank versus maybe the way your numbers shake out.
You know, it did take all season, Joel, but we finally felt validated with the Hawkeyes when they got curb stomped against Stanford in that Rose Bowl. So it may have taken, you know, 12 regular season games in the Big Ten Championship, but ultimately we trust our numbers and believe in regression. I guess, Payne, the other team that we thought a little bit differently about was probably Michigan, who Joel speaks, you know, nicely about talking about how they're deserving of being in the top four. You know, Wolverines-wise, we're not buying into them from our perspective, I wouldn't think.
Now, why? You tell me why, because, listen, the eye test, everything outside of their quarterback making three egregious errors tells me that that team was one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, when I watched that game, the first thing I said was Michigan's going to be a play-on team for the second half. And the second half line actually opened Michigan minus three. It closed Michigan minus six. So everybody saw the same thing. The two errors, basically all that Florida got in that first half. For me, I want to wait and see. It was more about Florida. I didn't get all the hype coming into the season. I know they play in a really weak side of the SEC division. And everyone was hyping them up. Hey, they're going to get back to the SEC championship game. I don't like Florida this year at all. Now you add in 10 suspensions. So I think it was that. The other thing, when you look at Florida, they're not really right now a traditional SEC team. You can bully them in the trenches, and that's exactly what Michigan did virtually all game. When they have to pass the ball, when they're forced to pass the ball, and you're looking at those third and seven, third and eight situations, I know they're not good situations for any quarterback, but when you have to force them to pass, they're just not very good, and I think that's eventually what will be Michigan's Achilles heel.
Joel, we look at Michigan real quick. I mean, schedule-wise, again, are we not going to know exactly how good this team is until October 21st when they have to go to Happy Valley and take on Penn State?
Potentially. I will just say this. That defense, regardless of who they are playing, they could have been playing Akron, it could have been Florida, it could have been Missouri, it could have been, you know, whoever, USC. That defense was faster than it was a year ago. It just was. And regardless of the quality of team Florida has, you know that they have speed. And Michigan made them look slow. So that's, you know, the pursuing of the football. A guy like Don Brown saying in a few different interviews, I think my defense is better than it is a year ago. There's those little things. I think they're going to be able to run the football more efficiently than they did a year ago. And then I understand all of those arguments. And you might be right, right? You might be right. I don't know if Vegas values Harbaugh enough. Guys, the guy's teams do not regress. They just don't. Throughout his entire career, year in and year out, they get better. They get better. They get better. They're more physical every single year. They play with his style and his will. That's what I saw against Florida. So I'll be shocked if, they're not right in the mix when it comes late in the season. I'll really be shocked.
One last thing on Michigan, Joel. What do you make of Wilton Spate and his uneven performance? Going 11 for 25. We mentioned those picks kind of leading to the only offense Florida was able to muster. Do we think that this Michigan team goes as he does? He just has to be good and almost a game manager for Michigan to truly realize their potential this season?
You know, regardless of what you think of Florida, a lot of that pessimism is their offense, right? I think you guys would agree with me. And their defense has always been pretty good. So I think that you give him a little bit of credit because it was such a good defense. They're a fast defense. And then also, you got to just sit there and say, he's got to be better than that. Listen, Wilton Spate plays average against Ohio State and they win a year ago. If he plays average against Florida, they win 45-3. So yeah, that's a concern. That's a concern, and he's got to get better. There's no doubt. Specifically, when there are open guys, he just has to hit them. He misses far too many open receivers, and then all of a sudden, we see those turnovers pop up.
Joel, you mentioned Coach Harbaugh, and obviously you're going to be on the call for one of his former stops along the way, Stanford taking on USC this weekend. USC, a 6.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Perfect. And we're not going to ask for a pick because we know you're on the call, but what kind of matchup should we be looking for when these two Pac-12 heavyweights go head-to-head?
I would be nervous for USC's defensive front seven because Western Michigan handled them a little bit, ran for, you know, right up there around the 250 mark, and Stanford's going to be better. They're going to be more mature, more physical, and a tougher, deeper offensive line. So that's something that I would be a little concerned about. The thing about USC is that they always have an extra gear, you know, and that not many teams have. And say that that's just the athlete factor, but those are the two things that I think that USC is going to have to go to another place, in particular with what we saw versus Western Michigan. They're going to have to get that extra gear because Stanford's so consistent and they're a lot better running the football and in their offensive line than people think.
And when we look at the rest of the landscape, I mean, a couple of games that could have major national championship implications, Oklahoma at Ohio State, Auburn at Clemson, Georgia at Notre Dame. Of that trio of matchups, anything that we should be looking for or potentially surprised by when we check the box scores come Sunday?
There's been a lot of conversation about Oklahoma missing D.D. Westbrook, but that wide receiver core, and you have to throw Mark Andrews, the tight end, with that. That wide receiver core is a better core of wide receivers than what they had a year ago. They might not have just the overall speed of a D.D. Westbrook, but they're deeper, they're more athletic, and Baker Mayfield looked as efficient as he's ever looked, and he just set the NCAA record for efficiency a year ago. He completed his first 16 passes of the game a week ago in week one, 19 of 20 for over 300 yards in the first half. And with what happened with Ohio State defensively, in particular in the passing game against Simi Cobbs and Indiana, there could be cause for concern there. I think that's going to be a great game. I would not be shocked at all if that is a, you know, one possession, 3-point game late into the fourth quarter. And then for me, the entire question about the Auburn-Clemson game is surrounding the Auburn defense. It's supposed to be better. They pitched a defensive shutout in week one, just the scoop fumble that they gave up for a touchdown when their offense was on the field. So that Kelly Bryant for Clemson against this improved defense for Auburn, that's going to be a huge question for me. I think that's where the game sits, because Clemson is clearly a great defense, and I believe that they're going to make it almost impossible, even for a Jared Stidham-led team offensively, for Auburn to Neubauer on the offensive side.
Hey, Joel, we know you are a busy man this time of year. Can't thank you enough for stopping by to share some of your thoughts, especially early on in the college football season. Folks can keep tabs on you on Twitter, at Joel Klatt, and we can only hope that Sunday's game between UCLA and Texas A&M is just a precursor for the rest of the season that you and Gus will be on the call for across the Fox family and networks.
Man, that would be nice. Hey, it's great talking with you guys. Enjoy it, and it was a pleasure.
Thanks again, Joel.
You got it.
I think it's always interesting, Payne, when you talk to guys like Joel who look at college football from an X's and O's standpoint. They want to see the on-field product and try and make, I don't want to call them generalizations, because there's not a guy out there who probably watches more film week in, week out than what Joel does. But the way that he kind of encapsulates Michigan's performance and putting them in his top 10, not only in top 10, but in the top 5, whereas we take that wait-and-see approach to Michigan. As you could tell, I still have some reservations about Wilton Spate and what he'll do under center for the Wolverines moving forward.
I mean, Wilton Spate should be questioned. I'm not sure what he is. I have no idea there. In terms of Joel, I was kind of combing the timeline. I don't believe he put out a preseason poll.
I didn't. I didn't see a preseason poll from him. So I think,
I get his angle, yeah. And it makes sense, right, from his perspective. I want to see something week one, and then I'll do my top 10, and then I'll adjust it. For us as sports bettors, we don't have that luxury. We have to put out, you know, our power ratings, and we'll adjust those week to week. Usually we don't make rash decisions and there's not too much movement week to week. But it is a little bit different. We are looking to find underlying things, right? That the scoreboard isn't the determinant for us. What's going on in the trenches? What's going on the field? What are the analytics metrics look like? That's what we're looking for, and that's how we can find value week to week. Certainly, I don't think anyone will make a case for a 3-loss team, you know, maybe being our 4th-rated team power ratings-wise, having a chance to get into the playoffs. You know, I get it from his perspective as well.
Yeah, I think it's oftentimes worth unpacking. I mean, everybody approaches it very differently. College football analysts, coaches, some of the voters in the popularity polls that we'll take shots at throughout the course of the season. That'll be nothing new versus what we look to do to try and ascertain that value. I mean, perfect example of the scoreboard not telling the truth. Two teams in the ACC that had what I would define not quite heartbreaking losses, because I don't think either had national championship aspirations. NC State dominating the stat sheet against South Carolina, 504 yards to 246, yet coming up short in a 35-28 loss against South Carolina. And then fast forward to Monday from that Saturday result, where Georgia Tech absolutely owns the trenches, especially on the offensive line against that young Volunteers defensive line. Ran the ball at will, 250-plus yard advantage. I think they, you know, over 660, all sorts of records, yet they come up on the short end of the stick in a 42-41 decision.
And you're not going to let the NC State loss go, are you?
Well, there was a point to this. It wasn't just a rant. We see the market open up right around 19.5-20 at BetOnline, and the price climbs to 24 because bettors realize, okay, the final score wasn't quite indicative of what we saw on the field play out for the Wolfpack. But no, I will. I let those games go. I give the games. Hey, hold on a second.
What did we make of Paul Johnson's decision there for two?
You know what? I put out a poll on Twitter, and I made it about $1.40 that he would go for two. I think you brought up a very interesting point as it pertains to the top and bottom half of the inning, so to speak, in overtime. And I'd rather have you articulate that better since you texted me immediately when he decided to go for two at that juncture in the game.
I am all about being uber aggressive, especially when you're perceived to be the underdog. I don't think they were. I mean, that was a stalemate. They played good for large stretches. They had the lead and dominated the line of scrimmage. I am all for going for two if you're handing the ball back to Tennessee. They were turning around and getting the ball back. And so that's why for me it was like, why are you going for two here? You're about to get the ball back on offense. You're about to make their defense not have a breather here, and you're going to be able to attack that line of scrimmage, which you did so well early on in the game. Certainly now when they're fatigued, you're going to have an advantage. So all for being aggressive and going for two, but I don't think you go for it when you're getting the ball back offensively.
I think, Paul Johnson felt he had a chance to win the game. The thing that I was more confused by is that you have Tennessee's defense on its heels. You know, why call your timeout, allow Tennessee to kind of set their alignment? They're able to take a timeout. They know you've come out there in the best formation that you're going to run for a two-point conversion. And Tennessee, for the, one of the first times, what felt like the entire second half, had positions in place to make a play at a critical juncture there. Georgia Tech ultimately coming up 1 yard short. I don't think it'll be the last we've heard of Tech this season, but I will tell you, if that defensive line doesn't mature and mature quickly, they're going to get blown off the ball week in, week out in conference play. And Payne, I guess two teams that we're going to see a lot about, trench warfare. Joel mentioned the Stanford-USC game. You're looking at USC, a 6.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Total here, 55.5. I think what's interesting about this is that BetOnline used a 10.5 to open this, which was right in line with game of the year numbers, given 1 week worth of results. USC struggles, Stanford's demolition of Rice down in Australia, and this market has settled at under a touchdown.
Went all the way down to 4, if I believe.
It bottomed out at 4 before you saw some resistance on the favorite.
Not bad taking 10.5 and laying 4 there.
No, I would agree. I would echo those same sentiments completely.
You know, there was question marks before the season with USC's offensive line. I know you had questions with their weapons outside not being experienced. And those all showed their face in game one. I will say this, though. I don't think at any point in the offseason USC is preparing for Western Michigan. It was all about Stanford week two. At no point were they going to put anything new on film. It was going to be strictly vanilla. So I'm not going to overreact to last week's performance, but it is concerning to see your defense get mauled in the trenches. They allowed 5.5 yards per rush attempt, so that is scary. When you're talking about Stanford, though, they just seem to cover games in the Pac-12. It's kind of the style they employ. And I don't want to keep saying this, but the Pac-12 plays a daintier West Coast brand.
Well, here we go. West Coast guys are soft. Here we go.
But I'm just saying this, and there's a reason why the Cardinal are 41-20-1 against the spread their last 62 conference games. And I know we joke about it, right? But there is a level of seriousness to this. And I hate making this comparison to like edited television, but did you see the season finale of Hard Knocks last night?
I did not actually see it yet. I got it on the DVR waiting. I was too busy prepping for this podcast.
Okay, so you hear Jameis Winston talking to two other teammates, and he starts to say, football is just different in the South. We play it because we love it. We play it because it's the only way to get out. And he's talking to a kid that's on the team, and he's from the West Coast. And the kid admits, yeah, I just play football because I'm good at it. And so there is something to this, and why we do joke around, but we're trying to evaluate here to make money. And there, when you hear Jameis come out and openly say this, and you hear the kid from the West Coast come out and openly say this, there's something to it. And when you look at this game, if you've read anything this week, Clay Helton and David Shaw both agree, like, running is winning is the quote for this series, and it's the reason why we've seen a lot of these totals fall short.
And I think you make an excellent point here. The side for me doesn't really offer a whole lot of value. If you believe overt and overreactions and you trust the game of the year openers, then clearly you're going to want to lay the points with USC. For me, I want to see some skill position players emerge. I don't trust this receiving core a ton. I know so much will be made and put on Sam Darnold's shoulders, whether it's fair or unfair. We'll see him hopefully at his best this weekend against Stanford. We know what Ronald Jones is running the football, but he's going to need some weapons to emerge in the receiving portion of the show. I will say, for folks that missed it, I'm not sure how they could, Jake Olson, a great story there. The legally blind long snapper gets a chance in a game. So kudos to Clay Helton for making it happen. Tim Lester of Western Michigan as well. But this game, Payne, you're exactly right. If I'm going to attack it from any perspective, it's going to be the total. I don't see a whole lot of value in the side. And I think when I look at the other big game on the schedule taking place in Columbus, the total's intriguing for me for different reasons here. We're Ohio State, a 7.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total here, 64.5. We saw the Buckeyes secondary get exposed against Simi Cobbs. Not exactly the ideal recipe when Baker Mayfield, he of the 19 for 20 first half performance against UTEP, comes rolling into town with revenge on his mind from the 42-21 loss the Sooners suffered a season ago in Norman.
Does this line paint a picture?
In terms of trying to...
It just feels really high, and that scares me if I'm looking back Oklahoma.
When we say it all the time, buddy. If it's too good to be true and backing an underdog where it feels comfortable and quote-unquote easy to take the points, oftentimes it isn't the case. Just ask Wyoming backers who love the fact the Cowboys were getting 12 points a week ago at Kinnick against Iowa.
Yeah, it just feels weird. And to kind of talk about this a little bit, there was some self-evaluation after Oklahoma's defense surrendered 59 a season ago to Texas Tech. From that point on, they became a top 35 defense in efficiency their final six games last year. You know, they went from allowing 37 the first seven games to less than 20 the last six. So they're trending in the right direction. And I think we talked about this in the preview podcast. It's sustainable because the Sooners went back to this more traditional 4-3, and that fits their system better. So if Ohio State is going to come in here confident saying, hey, we hung a bunch of points on the road last year, this is going to be easy this year, I don't think that's going to be the case. We did see Ohio State start to roll in the second half against Indiana, but they're still going to have some kinks to work out. You're still getting acclimated to a new system. You have a fifth-year senior quarterback who hasn't really ran this system before. So there's going to be some evening out there offensively. I really like this Oklahoma defense, but I think you nailed this on the head. When Richard Legault is going to throw for 410 yards on you, and your secondary, which is talented but extremely wet behind the ears, they may have some struggles covering the pass here. And so that's what it would scare me to lay 7.5 here with that secondary, thinking, hey, this could be a 10-14 point game the entire way. All of a sudden, Baker Mayfield gets it late, and that secondary just gets exposed a little bit more. The number, though, is scaring the heck out of me. Like, if Oklahoma had a shot here, this line's 4.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, this number pretty consistent to what we saw during the summer months. And I'll go one step further. When you talk about Ohio State's secondary, it clearly wasn't good by any stretch of the imagination, especially in the first half against Indiana. They did improve in the second half, but a lot of that came because of the push the defensive line was able to get. I think Ohio State is one of the best defensive lines, not only in the conference, but the entire country. And when you're playing at home where snap counts can be an issue for Baker Mayfield and a talented Oklahoma offensive line, that may give Ohio State a little bit of an edge, mask some of the deficiencies in the back end. But offensively, you talk about exactly what the Buckeyes are. I think they're still trying to figure out their identity.
That's the awesome matchup there, right? Oklahoma's offensive line's fantastic. Ohio State probably has one of the best front sevens in football. So that's going to be the matchup, which one enforces their will. And so when you look at Ohio State, like probably about a 3.5-point home field advantage as I'm looking at my sheet right near now, depending on the time of the game being played, depending on the opponent. Then you factor in where we have these power ratings. I mean, it's Alabama and then kind of everybody else. So even though we have Ohio State 2, Oklahoma 4, I mean, there's not much difference. I mean, this game should be 4.5. Maybe you stick it in the dead zone, let the market decide. But 7.5 scares the daylights out. I mean, that's why I'm not going to be on this game.
It's definitely a true bookmaker number. And I have to imagine as we get closer to Saturday, you're going to see about a 65-35 split with money coming in on the underdog. Not much different, to be completely honest, with what we're seeing in the Stanford-USC game. We'll call it a quartet of marquee matchups, maybe a trio and a plus one. The other game taking place with the defending champion Clemson Tigers hosting the Auburn Tigers. Number here at BetOnline, Clemson a 5.5-point chalk, total on the game 54. We saw Clemson absolutely annihilate Kent State in the Kelly Bryant debut. Jared Stidham, I'll call him average at best, in a workmanlike effort from Auburn, disposing of Georgia Southern, failing to cover as 34.5-point favorites. What do we make of this game, Payne? And I guess the matchup that I probably am most fascinated by, Clemson's defensive line against Auburn, to see if Stidham and company can really click at a high level.
That's the question. I talked to someone extremely sharp.
You talked to me a couple times a week.
And, you know, he had question marks about Stidham. When we were talking about evaluating Auburn, I had them power rated much higher than he did. And he said, I don't love the quarterback situation. I'm thinking to myself, Stidham's there, White's there once he comes back from suspension. And he's like, I just not sure. And last week, you know, it didn't look great from Stidham. I am going to give it another chance. He hadn't seen live bullets since November 2015, but a home game against a directional Georgia school is far different task than a night game in Death Valley against the defending champs. Yeah. When I look at Clemson, I think I want to throw out what I saw last week, right? And specifically Bryant. I believe there's still question marks there. You're not going to be able to operate an offense like it's high school, and you can just run out wide and out athlete Auburn like you did against Kent State. Kent State took that game just to collect a check, nothing more, kept it super vanilla, ran it up the middle virtually every single time. They attempted five passes the entire game, despite being down 50. They were down for 58 and a half minutes of that game.
I think that's the most fascinating part of the game, to be
honest.
You
didn't even get to the most fascinating part. You know their head coach didn't even show up for the game?
I had no idea. Yeah, I mean, I didn't
just said, hey,
I
didn't know, this one's going to be an L. I'm going to kick it back here at home.
I didn't know Kent State even had a head coach that, you know, could impact a number. But the fact
so that
they
was
were
collect a check, stay healthy for conference. Yeah,
the
Kent
fact
State.
That you would go vanilla in a game you're getting absolutely bored. Hey, we're not going to show the playbook. We're happy to take a 50-point loss. You know, I kind of have to tip my hat to the Golden Flash as the program as a whole to try and
collect
do that.
Collect the check, baby. That's all it's about. I will say this. You know, you get Auburn looking for some revenge here. They have a quarterback that can throw the forward pass, unlike last year. Petaway and Davis are back from suspension. The one thing you're going to want to look at here is Kerryon Johnson. He's dealing with a hamstring injury. No update on him. He's that change of pace back from Petaway. It'll be a nice 1-2 punch there. So you're going to want to monitor the Kerryon Johnson situation.
Again, a game that, you know, no first half totals available yet, but might be worth poking around if we think that yep. Dabo trusts his defense enough, let his young quarterback get his feet wet, run the football, play a, you know, possession and field position type game last year. Very defensive minded between these two teams, with neither getting to the 20-point threshold, if memory serves me correct.
19-13, believe.
Yep. Not exactly a one for the highlight reel for Deshaun Watson.
No.
Georgia against Notre Dame, a fascinating game for a number of reasons. Not only will the fact will it be a night tilt in South Bend, you saw the market open at 6.5 for this contest at betonline.ag. Total here now sits at 55.5, but you've seen movement on both the side and the total. Total been manipulated quite a bit. Side down to 4.5. The big news for the Georgia Bulldogs, Jacob Eason, their expected starter coming into the season, will be sidelined for the foreseeable future. Fromm steps in. I think Fromm can be an upgrade, maybe not from an experience standpoint. We know Georgia can run the football. We know they can play defense. For me, Payne, the jury is still very much out on Notre Dame, despite their 49-16 shellacking of Temple and Brandon Wimbush looking like the second coming of Touchdown Jesus.
I think Temple's going to be really down this year. So this will be the test for Wimbush. He's going to be, I think, forced to make plays through the air. But in a game where there could potentially be a stalemate by both offenses, it could be Wimbush's legs that kind of just create that one extra play. The other quarterback, Fromm, I agree with you. I believe he's an upgrade at quarterback for Georgia. And there were plenty of guys I know that visited the Bulldogs this summer and would see both Fromm and Eason throw, and it was evident who the better quarterback was and who had better control of the offense. I talked to another guy that said, hey, Georgia really didn't have a third-string quarterback. So Fromm got like an unusually high percentage of reps in spring. That's going to be interesting here, but it is tough. You're making your first start. He got the history of Notre Dame. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on there. These games, to me, are most interesting because it's going to, I think, be more reliant on the players. What is there to go on here film-wise? It's not two teams that are familiar with one another. It's not two teams that have guys that have played a ton. You got two new quarterbacks. Like, there's just not a ton of film here. There are question marks coming into the season about Georgia's offensive line. There's questions about Notre Dame's defensive front four. I think that battle, you know, it's going to determine the game, because if Georgia can get Chubb and Michelle going, it just makes it so much easier for Fromm. So, man, a lot of public tickets on Georgia, though, as well.
Yep, and I think that number could come down a little bit. I do think, regardless of where the bet splits end up settling, that 6.5 was a little bit aggressive. You saw the market correct itself, but wouldn't be surprised in the least if you had some folks laying Notre Dame as this number trended down. The game of the year line during the summer, you did have Georgia listed as a 2.5-point favorite, I believe, at the Westgate Superbook.
Okay, so you've seen 6.5 was a big move here.
Yep, and I think a lot of it,
not,
you know, oddsmakers trying to figure
out between Eason and Fromm.
Eason and Fromm. Yep, I think that was a big part of it. And now you're caught between a rock and a hard place. Once you open a little bit higher, you obviously don't want to go all the way down to three and open yourself to get sided. So the question really becomes, where will you see resistance? There are some fives out here in the desert. As we mentioned, betonline.ag sits at 4.5 and even some other fours offshore. So we'll see where this goes. I think a great measuring stick game for both teams. And Georgia now, given what we saw opening weekend, clearly in a class of its own as far as SEC East supremacy. So a loss to Notre Dame, probably not the most debilitating. Maybe in the chase for a national championship if you believe that's their ceiling. But obviously no impact on winning a conference title.
No, I don't think so. And whoever got plus 160, plus 180 about a week before the season started for Georgia to win the East is probably happy right now.
Yeah, sitting pretty on that particular ticket. Some other games of note, and don't want to necessarily do full deep dives on these. Nebraska at Oregon. And the reason I bring this game up, Payne, both teams kind of had different results week one. Oregon absolutely embarrassing their FCS opponent. They hang 70 in Willie Taggart's debut. The defense looks like it had a semblance of competence. Nebraska had a hold on for dear life late against Arkansas State. You did see sharp money coming to Arkansas State, taking that number down to 14. But game of the year-wise, this number, Oregon was listed as a six-point favorite. Right now, you see the Ducks 14-point chalk at betonline.ag. Total here at 68. Total did get as high as 72 before it came down. I look at this Oregon offense. I think they have playmakers, but I still think the jury is out defensively. And if I feel comfortable even considering them at an inflated price tag at two touchdowns against Nebraska's offense that I think can be better than people think.
It's a big leap here. Six, as you alluded to, was the summer line. This opened 10 this week, and now we're out to 14. And again, it's about not overreacting too much to week one. We saw Nebraska struggle at home with Arkansas State. I know all offseason they're raving about their new quarterback from Tulane.
Tanner Lee, baby, get on the bandwagon.
Second coming. I will say this, though. There's an interesting angle here, and I know it's a different coaching staff at Oregon with Willie Taggart, but...
I like where you're going here, though.
Riley... knows how to keep it close against Oregon. Him being at Oregon State, he was kind of the giant slayer in that conference. Everybody respected the hell out of him because he always had an undermanned team and seemed to play, get his guys to play up in the big game, specifically against Oregon. So he knows this team pretty well. He knows the style they want to run. I just, 14 feels like a lot from an overreaction, but I am not high on Nebraska this year as most folks were. I know that was a total that opened in some places as low as six, shot up to as high as seven. Then we did see some resistance from professionals at seven. If you just read, and I know this is the most case for college teams, their beat writers are former students or current students. So if you read stuff on college football, I mean, it's nothing but rainbows and pots of gold. So you really have to kind of differentiate some things and get real information. So everyone was in love with Nebraska in the offseason. Tanner Lee was the second coming. I don't see that. So I think Nebraska's a bad team, but I'm certainly, when it comes to Riley in these games, I wouldn't be running to lay 14.
When you talk about painting a rosy outlook, just ask the Texas fans who quoted Tom Herman as saying, "I have the best offensive line I've ever been around," but I digress completely because we'll spend plenty of time on the Longhorns next week.
They got to start the young kid there, right?
Sam Ellinger will get the nod this week. It looks like Shane Bouchel dealing with a sore bruised throwing shoulder, and I think this is exactly what Tom Herman wanted. He gets a dual threat quarterback under center, a chance to get his feet wet against San Jose State, maybe go out there and look good. And don't write off the Longhorns just yet, because if the number's right, I think we might be able to make a compelling case for their trip out to the West Coast to take on USC about 10 days out. Boise State and Washington State, the nightcap on ESPN. This number opened with Washington State a 7-point favorite. Prices ballooned out to 10.5 at betonline.ag. Total here 57.5 down from where it opened as well. Payne, Washington State, kudos to Mike Leach. He finally got the monkey off his back. They win a season opener game against an FCS opponent, blanking Montana State 31-0. Boise State, pretty ineffective, albeit covering a late number against Troy. Thankfully, those folks that read our column at Outkick were able to take 11.5 and cash there with the dog. Boise didn't impress me whatsoever. I have big things planned for, or I think Washington State's capable of under Luke Falk's leadership. Are you on board with this move? A little bit surprised? I actually quite agree with the total coming down a full field.
I'm on board with this move. And it's still early in the season where books didn't adjust enough, right? You don't want to over-adjust or overreact to week one. But this Boise team isn't very good. And we've...
Harsing.
What's that?
I said, I'm going to put it on the coach's shoulders. I don't think... You're about to see a precipitous drop-off from Boise and what we've grown accustomed to as Chris Peterson's guys filter out, and it really has Brian Harsing's fingerprints all over.
And I think we saw it last week. The local people know. Didn't sell out.
What,
I mean,
I
just think
10,000 tickets.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to be down. And then the worst thing comes. You decide to create a quarterback controversy. So that's what Boise's staring at right now. This is, I agree with the move here. This move is very sharp. It is a different ball game laying 7 than laying 10.5. So I'm not running the lay 10.5 at this point. But Boise is going to have some trouble this year, no doubt. And I don't get why he decided, on top of all of this, I'm going to spark a quarterback debate.
Yeah, I think that Boise is going to be a team that we'll have ample opportunity to go against until the market corrects itself. As we mentioned last week, Boise struggled at home, a little bit different on the road, but I think Washington State, a team on the ascent, I trust their quarterback play much more, but you hit the nail on the head talking about a very different scenario handicapping-wise, laying 7 versus laying 10. A rivalry game in the Midwest, not a lot of people care about, but if you're in and around these two programs, one of the biggest games of the year, the Cy-Hawk Showdown, the Hawkeyes go on the road to take on the Iowa State Cyclones. Iowa, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, total here 48. If we talk
can
about
I be one of those
anemic
people that don't
offense,
care about it?
Yeah, you can be one of those people that don't care about it. I grew up in the Midwest, so this was a little bit bigger deal. And I have way too many friends that probably listen to this podcast that went to Iowa that always have this game circled.
The dog's going to take some money here, right?
Yeah, I think the dog takes some money here. And I will say, you know, I know a lot of people were enamored with Wyoming going into that Iowa game. Wyoming didn't do anything that should really discourage people or have them anointing Iowa the second coming. Iowa outgained the Cowboys 263 to 233. Josh Allen had a touchdown pass dropped in the end zone. Nathan Stanley, 8 of 15 for the Hawkeyes. Akram Wadley, he's going to be the guy that you need to look for. Iowa State gave up a little over 5 yards a carry to Northern Iowa. But I think this is an Iowa State team, Payne, that for me personally, I had a bye. Sign written by them. I like their quarterback. I like their ability at wide receiver. And I think that this could be a chance for them to get their monkey off their back. Would love 3 if it gets there. I'm just not sure that the market will allow for the dog to get to a full field goal.
There's some 3 out there. I will say this. I agree. Iowa State, we talked about this a little bit. Again, going back to the preview podcast where we weren't quite sure the W's would stack up in the win column, but we liked their offense and they were going to be a team we would look to buy week to week in the right spots. This is probably one of those right spots. If you can find a 3 now, I don't think it lasts. That's the way the market's going to be moving here.
You know what? As I look at the screen, the only shop that had a 3, they don't take my action, but there is another 3 where I may have to get down shortly after recording to try and back the dog. We do have what we would call the strongest investment of the week. But before we get there, it's time to welcome in one of our dear friends. From a name prominent in the college football world to a man prominent in his own mind, we welcome in Dave Mason. You can follow Dave on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, are you sick of us yet? I mean, this 2 to 3 times a week deal, I mean, it's a lot to handle.
Now, ask me in a couple months. Right now, it's exciting. But who knows come October, November? We'll see. But no, right now, it's
hell
great.
Of an intro. Hell of an intro, right? For the guy.
Are you saying
I'm cringing over
hey,
here.
Hey, Payne, I'm going to set the over under 1.5 weeks for Dave. But, you know, either way, I guess the first things first, when we talk college football, clearly one of the biggest games, at least on paper, Dave, going into any college football season, Alabama against Florida State. What did the betting handle look like overall, and how was the result for the house?
The betting handle was huge. Saturday was great. We had great handle, as expected. You know, so many guys came in early the week before, so actives were up, reactivations up. There's a lot of people coming in for week one. That was such a huge, huge game. It was probably about twice as much action on that game than any other game on Saturday. The result didn't go so great. We needed Seminoles pretty big. But what can you do? The bettors ended up winning. They had a profitable Saturday. You know, it wasn't as big as I thought. It was probably about a third. I had a number of mine Sunday when I checked, and it was about – I was expecting the loss for the house to be about three times as much what it was. So I was kind of pleased there. That wasn't as big as we thought. But, yeah, that was a huge loss. But what can you do?
As we transition to week two, a lot of big games. Talk about some sharp action. Talk about some square action. And if you have anything specific on those four monster games, Auburn, Clemson, Georgia, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Stanford, USC, any of the big games.
Right. Well, as far as public, we'll go over that first. The public Clemson over Auburn. That's one of the big games. About 61% of the bets are on Clemson. And once again, most of the action is yet to come in, so some of this will switch a little bit. These are early trending stats. Georgia over Notre Dame. About 77% of the early bettors are on Georgia. 75% of the early bettors are on Stanford. But the cash is a little bit more even. It's down about 60% of the cash is on Stanford. So that's kind of, you know, off a little bit. And again, that could just be a few early big bettors betting Stanford. So Oklahoma, that's another one. The cash is pretty even, 50-50. But the bettors, about 68% of the bettors are on Oklahoma. So again, early. So it could be just a few big bettors on the one on Ohio State that's evening that cash out a little bit. Biggest exposure of the weekend so far, this will change, it's just because it's the earliest game, is Oklahoma State over South Alabama. Oklahoma State's getting pounded. 76% of the action's on Oklahoma State so far. Penn State, that's another going to be another big decision. About 69% of the early actions on Penn State. Wisconsin, 68% of the early actions on Wisconsin. So that's what we got for the public.
Hey, side. Dave, one last thing in regards to week one. We know Alabama, Florida State, obviously the biggest handle that you saw on Saturday. How big was the handle for the standalone games on Sunday when you had the tandem of games going? And then, of course, the Georgia Tech-Tennessee game that went on Monday night.
It was great. Sunday was really good. But I mean, that Monday night game, that was like a Monday night football game for football, for NFL. It was just off the charts. And I know it was a standalone game, so sure, it's going to get more action. But I mean, it's just exceeded those levels that it was. I mean, if I was going to set it over under on a number that I was expecting, you know, when I got the numbers, I was like, it exceeded my expectations by about three times, to tell you the truth. It was there was so much action, and we needed Georgia Tech, so that was a good result for the house. That kind of brought us back, almost back to even for the weekend. Like I said, we got beat up on Saturday. Again, not as much as I thought, but you know, Sunday night's games went okay. It was won a little bit, and then Monday night's game was really, really big for the house. That was by far our biggest winner of the weekend. So yeah, but the action, it was incredible. It was awesome.
And for those folks that aren't already in on the action, I'm not sure why they wouldn't be, knowing that betonline.ag puts their college football numbers the earliest of any book in the industry on Sunday afternoon. What kind of promotions are available specific to our loyal following here around Bet the Board?
All right. If you do not have a BetOnline account, head over to betonline.ag and sign up for one. Then use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and you have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus is $1,000. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Those are the sweet sounds of Dave Mason. He joins us every Wednesday all fall long to talk college football, every Thursday to talk a little National Football League. And Dave, make sure you have your rest, because it's about to be a 17-week grind with college and pro keeping us all occupied every weekend long. Can't thank you enough for the great information. And folks can always follow you on Twitter to see exactly who the house is rooting for at Dave Mason, B-O-L.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Dave, bringing up all the square action, I wondered where some of the sharp action was coming in this weekend. We'll have to find it on our own, apparently.
I guess so. Maybe now that he's become a podcast superstar, he's saving some of that information for other places.
Yeah, he is a mega legend right now. We won't tell anybody else where they can find him. We obviously want to keep our audience here. But, you know, Dave out there doing yeoman's type work, sharing the wisdom that is being point man for betonline.ag. One thing, Payne, before we get to our strongest investment advice of the week, I know this is a college football podcast, but we have something very special going on the NFL side. And for folks that may not have listened to our NFL podcast, do you want to share those details with our loyal listenership?
Are we talking about the contest?
I think we are talking about the contest.
The contest.
The contest.
The only contest online this NFL season.
The only contest online this NFL season that now has 1,300 entrants and counting.
Okay. So you're going to want to go to bettheboard.footballcontest.com, sign up. It is absolutely free to join. It's a pick five. Every week you pick your best five games against the spread, and it's $5,000 worth of prizes. We have yet to determine the price structure, whether it's going to be top 10, top 25, top 50. We may just put it out for a vote on social media and let you guys decide how the price structure and prizes should be dispersed, but it's a free $5,000 up for grabs, and it's absolutely free to join. Bettheboard.footballcontest.com. Singular contest.
One entry per person. Please use your Twitter handle. Be following Bet the Board Pod on Twitter.
Those are actually rules.
Yep, and you'll have a chance to vote as the way the prize structure goes. But we're in the business of trying to make you more informed bettors, and there is one particular investment we think will get you to the window on Saturday. And I don't know if I should go drum roll, because it's not one of the marquee games. We're not going big game hunting like we did last week with the Alabama-Florida State first half under. I don't think so.
Ohio State, Oklahoma?
You know,
no.
I wanted to make a case for the over. Don't think I'm going to call that our best
bet.
What
other big games are out there?
No, I wanted to make a case for Stanford-USC under. Don't think we're going to make that our best bet.
Oh, the big game you were telling me about earlier.
The big game.
Tulane and Navy?
It involves one of our service academies.
Tulane and Navy, that's a big game.
It is a big game. Wherever we're invested, that is a big game. That's how I see it.
Okay. I mean, Tulane's kind of gone to this option attack. We usually play Army-Navy under. This has taken some significant sharp money under already. Can't believe it opened 55. Usually we get the Service Academy games low 50, so 55 is a bad number here. First half under. Yep. Market has not opened yet, but it's going to. 24 or better is what we're looking for.
That is exactly what we're looking for. I do think, personally, the dog is live as well. Clearly a correlation there. If you read Willie Fritz's comments throughout the offseason, this was a game they had circled. They weren't worried about Grambling. He's trying to build a program in year two. We saw some market improvement from the Tulane Green Wave in stretches late in the year. They get a resounding win against UConn to close the season. And this is a team, Payne, I don't think is going to necessarily get to 6-6 because their schedule may not allow for it, but they could be point spread darlings. More importantly for us, though, just play defense. All we're asking on Saturday, play defense, show some discipline, assignment football. Don't look like Lane Kiffin and the Florida Atlantic Owls. We'll be able to get our ticket to the window.
The key to these are each team getting about two or three first downs and then punting.
I just want this first half of football to be played in about 72 minutes of real time. That's all I want. 72 minutes of real time is what I'm looking for here. But yeah, first half under, 24 better. The go price there. Do think the dog is live should the 14 pop as well. But that'll get you to the window. And as we like to say, 24 gets us to the party, my friend.
There you go.
On Tulane and Navy first half under.
I like that.
Any other games we didn't hit on that you wanted to add? Any quick nuggets? I know we haven't covered the full board. We won't cover the full board any particular week this season, but I wasn't sure if there was a game or two that you wanted to touch on before we bid a fond farewell to our loyal listenership.
No, I think we're good. I actually have to do some manual labor and maybe hang a shutter or two.
Be good for you. Be good for you for those soft hands to go out there, do a little manual labor, get in the trenches. But for all of our listeners throughout the Southeast, obviously those folks still putting their lives back together from the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. Our thoughts will be with anyone in the path of Hurricane Irma, with you as well, Payne. Focus on the family. Gambling should be secondary and a distraction. Get to the window with the Midshipmen and the Green Wave first half under. We'll be back with you next Wednesday. Thanks again to Outkick the Coverage as a new distribution partner for the Bet the Board podcast. Happy wagering this weekend, and we'll see you at the window.